with the latest in technology news and views. This is TechWrap, the podcast.
Welcome to another edition of TechWrap, the podcast. We are online at techwrap.net. We have an email address, mail@techwrap.net. You can find us on the social media as well. We're on Facebook. Search for TechWrap Australia. And for another week, Will, g'day.
Hello, how's it going? I've been going pretty well. I don't know about you. Any new gadgets in your life? Any new tech?
No new gadgets in my life since I brought the Rodecaster into the equation, which is what we're pretty much recording this on at the moment. And, you know, it's been very handy over the last couple of weeks, not only for the fact that we can record our podcast nice and easy, but, you know, you can do some radio gubbins with it as well and have no dramas in the world. And you know, if you don't have a computer nearby, you can record everything onto a little memory stick and you're done.
Absolutely brilliant. Now, you've been using it for a couple of weeks now. Is there any sort of, you know, feedback you have or any little bits of that? Well, that was a bit awkward, or is everything running beautifully smooth without a hitch?
I think there's little tweaks that they could continue to do with the little, you know, operating system that they've got on the touchscreen display. You know, but generally, I think they've really thought about, you know, what they've decided to put out in this package. And broadly, you know, it does the job very well, and it phases out the need for you to be plugging in all sorts of bits and bobs and pairing things together. And you know, having that potential of something working one week and then not the next, which is a little bit like the problems that I have encountered in the past when recording the podcast on my own home equipment rather than, you know, like sitting in the situation of, like at work where I've recorded podcasts before and you know, that all that stuff works because it has to work in a work environment.
Yeah.
But you know, so this has been nice and easy.
Yeah, so do you reckon that those things you mentioned about the OS and the touchscreen and stuff like that, do you reckon that could be addressed in a future firmware update?
Of course they can be addressed in future firmware updates. They have released a firmware update since the device came out, and that allowed basically what you call multi-track recording, so you can split each of the recordings down to each of the individual channels on the device. And essentially, you know, if you didn't want to have echo from your co-host, you could actually bring that multi-track in and take that section out of the recording, so it would be absolutely perfect for you.
Or you could take my track out and add auto-tune to it, and then I could sing everything and I would sound amazing.
You're already trying to sing there by the sounds of it.
Yeah, but when you auto-tune it now afterwards, I'm going to sound pitch perfect.
But yeah,
I have a new bit of gear in my life.
You do?
Yeah, I picked it up the other day. It is an Insta360 ONE X, which is a 360-degree action camera. Can record in, you know, well, full 360. That's the whole point of it. And really crisp video, as well as taking 360-degree photos. It has inbuilt stabilization. It has the software that you can download after the fact, where you generally have these cameras out on a selfie stick and, you know, you can run about with them. It'll actually, they're calling it invisible selfie stick. So what it will do, it will detect the stick and it will essentially Photoshop the stick out so it looks like the camera is just floating in air above you and you've kind of got this orb camera that's floating next to you and you can't actually see it connected to the stick, which is really cool. Another interesting feature I saw of this, they're calling it bullet time. And what you can do, there's either the MacGyver way you can do this or the professional way. If you go the professional way, it's a selfie stick and it's attached to another stick, but then that sort of goes at a 90-degree angle and it's on a swivel. So what you essentially do, you hold that bottom bit and then it swings, the selfie stick comes out at a 90-degree angle, and then you swing the camera around you and it will rotate above your head, and you put the settings into super slow motion, and as it goes around your head, it creates that kind of classic, well, bullet time from the Matrix look as it goes around you, which is really cool. That combo is about, I think, $90 for the stick and the bullet time accessory. But what I'd seen on previous cameras and how they advertised it, or someone did somewhere, I'm calling it the MacGyver way, you essentially attach the camera to like a bit of string, make sure it's like strong or fishing wire or something, and then you just swing the camera around your head. And hopefully you don't hit yourself in the face or anything, but you're essentially creating the same effect. But how funny is that?
It is funny. This would be an improvement on your previous 360 degree cameras.
Yeah, I had the Samsung, what was it called? The Samsung 360, I think it was, or I'm pretty sure that's what it was called.
That went very quiet.
Came out. Oh, 2016 or 2015, 2016. And yeah, we had a bit of play with that. And at the time it was quite good, but now over the years, the lenses have gotten a lot better. They're just way better with the dynamic range, low light capabilities. The lens is way better. So look, I thought it was time for an upgrade. I'd had that one for a long time, and I occasionally do some 360 photo work, and I saw like the video capabilities I thought would be really cool on the old electric skateboard, so I could use it as a bit of an action cam, and I can then sort of, I can just have the camera in one spot, and then later in post I can sort of show you where you want to look, because there are two ways of sort of doing it. You can do the 360 and then do the whole thing where you put the Google goggles on or something, or you look it on your phone, and then wherever you hold your phone in 360 space, that'll show you the area. Or you could just take the footage and then cut it in post and use it just like a normal action camera, but you have the capabilities after the fact to show, you know, what part of the angle you want to show at that given time. So that's really cool. So I'm looking forward to giving that a test out in the coming weeks, and you know, I might put some footage up. I've yet to open the box, Gettys, because I'm thinking of doing a little unboxing and popping it up on the YouTube and doing a mini review of it while I'm at it, might as well. So yeah, keep an eye out for that.
So how long has it been in the box for since you purchased it?
Well, I purchased it on Friday, but then, you know, I went away for the weekend. So I didn't pick it up on the Friday. So I actually only picked it up today. So it's sitting in front of me, and it's a nice, beautiful black box begging me to open it. But I'm going to save it for tomorrow, and I'm going to film the unboxing.
And if you're anything like me, you'd usually be pretty tempted by the fact you've just got...
I'm going to open it so bad. I'm going to just rip that thing like Christmas Day. But, I mean, it's night right now, so I don't think I'd be able to play around with it too much.
Wouldn't look any good anyway.
Just resist all my urges and just save it for some content we can put up on the website and YouTube channel, and maybe some people will watch it and get something out of it, and I'll give you my thoughts, and we'll see how it goes, huh?
Really looking forward to hearing about it.
Yeah, I'm so excited. I just want to open it. But that's my intro, personal tech news for the week. Of course, there has been other tech news happening out there in the world. What's been going on around the traps?
Now, I know we've been harping on about Huawei, but, you know, they've been getting a lot of attention with all the ruckus that went on in the US. The court case is coming. I have mentioned that in the past. It doesn't seem to be suppressing the amount of sale of, you know, devices that they sell. The Huawei Watch GT, which is a model a little bit similar to the watch that I got basically in promotion earlier in the year, they were bundling with their mobile phones, has reportedly sold more than 2 million units globally in the time that it has been on sale. Now, of course, one of the main factors for this is the factor of battery life. These things can get well close to a week's full usage due to the fact that they have, you know, they've picked up a version of an Android operating system and made it, I guess, less bloaty, and have been able to get it to, you know, more effectively manage its battery time. And so these things are, you know, are getting good life. They do have limited function in, you know, what you can do with changing watch faces and some settings you can achieve. But let's all be honest, there's only a certain amount of customization that you generally give to these sort of devices. And you wear it on your arm all the time, and, you know, there's a fad period where you like to use all the features that are available on it, and then you get that busy that you just forget it. So, you know, for general use and tracking, you know, fitness data and health data, well, it's just doing its job without you interfering at all.
Now, my question is, they are using a version of the Android Wear, are they? Is Android, so will that, is that pending, that might need to change eventually, or is it their own operating system? Or
it's their own operating system in essence, but derived from, you know, an Android base originally. Okay. And when you talk about Android in its pure essence with its, you know, open source non-connection to Google, you know, that is still an open source product that everybody can jump into and contribute to and build their own, you know, builds of. It's more of, you know, when your general discussion of Android and support with Google, it's about its connection to the app stores, the Google Play services, you know, other Google services that people are using. More and you know, security updates associated with them than just the base Android operating system itself, which is, you know, under an open source platform.
So the watch is pretty much safe at this point. It's just their phones, because they're so heavily reliant on the App Store and the Google Play services.
But on that note,
it's a bit more tricky.
Yeah, on that note, though, I guess they're just affirming to everyone at this point in time, as they have on a couple of occasions, that, you know, anyone who has purchased or is looking to purchase any of the handsets that are currently out in the wild and being sold, you know, were sold before any of this drama came up, they are certain with their security updates for the future at this point in time, with relation to, you know, rolling out any future Android updates. And the big one coming next, of course, is Android Q. As quick as we got Pi onto our devices, we'll be looking towards Android
Q.
You
got Pi on your phone? Did you clean it off?
But, you know, it's, you know, there's certainty. There's certainty in the product. And, you know, we'll see further when they do actually go to trial. And, you know, I reckon, I've got this slight feeling in me that some of this will just blow over, because, you know, this Trump guy, he's just full of hot air, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully it does, and, you know, it all gets sorted out, but we will be keeping a keen eye on progress, and we'll keep you updated with what's going on, because it's interesting discussion nonetheless. Do we know what the Q stands for in Android Q?
I've not actually investigated that one.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything personally. Do you remember ages ago when, was it Android, was it M? A long time ago, and yeah, we were speculating on the names. What jumps to mind for you with Q? Quince?
Quince.
That is
so left of field, isn't it?
How do you spell quiche? Is quiche? How do you spell quiche? Is that with a Q? Quebec.
Yes.
We could go the phonetic alphabet.
Quebec.
Android Quebec.
Sounds good, doesn't it?
That's like it's always like a lolly, isn't it? So what would be a lolly that starts with Q, or dessert? I have no idea.
I've just found a speculation page.
Oh, yes. Give me some speculative
so,
names for Q.
You came up with quiche, not
quiche.
Quiche.
Quince. What's a quiche? Quiche.
It's a badly pronounced quiche. So, Americans, Quaker Oats.
Okay, never heard of it. Okay.
I have never heard of a quindim before today. Quindim apparently is a tasty-looking custard that's popular in Brazil.
Right. You think they'd want something a little bit more known globally, wouldn't you? For the
Is there
anything on that list that's a little bit more globally recognisable?
Well, not more so than, you know, that wonderful treat we just talked about in the quiche. That is something that is a standout. That does start with a Q, yes.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. It could be one of those tricky ones that starts with God knows what, like a silent T or something.
So you obviously don't eat quiche very much.
No, they say there's two types of people in this world, those who eat quiche and those who don't. So I guess I'm one of those ones that don't.
Well, I'm definitely on the quiche camp, just to keep everything
all right, partial. Well, we'll keep that posted then. And if it turns out to be Android quiche, I'll buy you a quiche next time I see you.
I'll make you eat a quiche.
All right, you're on. Do you know, speaking of phones, my current provider is Telstra at the minute, and I believe you're now with Optus because they offered a better deal
a couple of years ago.
Okay, so you're still with Optus, and that's been one of my pet peeves with Telstra, because they're one of the, how do you say this, like they're the predominant,
they have market dominance,
they have the biggest market dominance,
they have infrastructure,
generally been the most expensive plans, and they've pushed a lot of people away from their SIM only plans and things like this. But I got an email, because I'm with Telstra, and I got an email recently. It said something there about a big overhaul to their plans. What's going on there?
Yeah, they've made considerable changes to their mobile phone, home phone and other services, I guess, to make things look a little bit more attractive to those that wouldn't have continued with them, or even considered the concept of utilizing their mobile network, given they were the biggest and the best provider for some time. And of course, you know, the basis for their network is back from the government telecom ages. You know, they always just thought, well, we're here, we do it best, we're not changing. But getting to the era where people are connecting to the internet via the national broadband network, which means that Telstra's networks are not being used in full dominance, and the fact that there's so many options with other mobile phone providers, they're starting to realise that they are losing their market share to the significance that, you know, they're needing to cut jobs, they're needing to make changes to their general structure to be able to keep themselves financially viable, because, you know, all of those people who used to sign up with Telstra are just not, openly coming there now. They've decided to do a complete restructure on the plans. So right down to the point of simplifying it by calling plans small, medium, large, and extra large. Now, they kind of had this sort of idea in the past, but, all of the features were all over the place with regards to, what sort of data inclusions you were looking at, what sort of money you were paying. So apparently the smallest plan is $50 a month on their mobile section, and that's about 15 gigabytes of data, and all the rest is unlimited. They're going to be potentially charging extra money for 5G network access when, you know, that is a little bit more mainstream around the part. But for general 4G, access, this is the sort of figure you're looking. A large plan, $80 a month with 100 gigabytes of data, and their extra large is only 150 gig, but, you know, that's still sizable compared to what they used to offer. And that one's looking at a figure of $100 a month. What they do with relation to, getting a mobile phone on a contract, the mobile handset fee is separate to the data and phone plan generally. So there'll be two separate charged amounts. And with this, your phone plan is month to month, which means you'll be able to move up and down your phone plans as you need, and just pay your handset off separate to that, but on the same bill. And, you know, if you decide you don't want to be with Telstra anymore, I guess you can continue to, you know, pay that phone out. Or if you leave Telstra completely, that phone gets paid out separate to the phone, the phone plan, the call plan that you're on, and it makes them two separate beasts. There is a little bit of questionable wording in some of the plan inclusions, like the one that says, from time to time, we may make changes to your plan, including price and inclusions,
yeah,
or we may move you to a new plan, which may cost more. So, you know, it does, by signing up to these new packages, allow them to change the package structures as need be. But in when it comes to bang for buck for you know, data and the fact that you're on one of the largest mobile providers in the country, you know, they're starting to look a lot better than they previously have been.
Yeah, they're definitely looking better than they have been, like comparatively to themselves. Like, I really like the fact that they've scrapped sort of the contracts, so there's no longer lock-in contracts. That's really great. So you're not locked on them for 12 months, 24 months. I like that you can change your plan month to month. You can go up and down. You can change it, I think, once a month you can change it. But as a package, it compared to other providers, doesn't seem overly appealing to me. Now, I see about the they have, okay, Telstra, positives, what? No lock-in contract, great. Amazing coverage, Australia-wide check. Probably the fastest data connections in terms of downloads and uploads you're going to get.
It does depend, though.
Yeah, but generally, as a rule of thumb, I think Telstra will probably, you will do some tests later.
Given you're in
5G.
Given you're in a metropolitan area at the moment, I just think that Telstra, you know, they're doing a fantastic job there. Justin, as an example, in a regional centre, I've gone head-to-head with another mobile Telstra phone user in the building, and they've been on Telstra, and they've actually struggled to get the speeds that I have 4G on Optus. But your mileage does vary from location to location,
very,
I believe.
True. So I'm reading here, it says you have 5G network access free trial until the 30th of June 2020. Then yes, you have to opt in for an additional, this is the interpretation I'm getting, then it's an extra $15 a month on top of what you're paying for access to 5G, which is ridiculous. I think most of the time 4G is going to suit your needs. Mm. Like, there's no need for these, and you're going to use your 15 gig. If you're needing 5G speeds, you're going to use it up in just no time at all. So that's an interesting thing. Whether, I guess that's that wording, you know, we may change your plan at any time. That just covers them after the 30th of June. They can then just charge you that extra $15 a month, which means it's $65 a month for 15 gig with access to the 5G. But currently, right now, I assume other people are going to be able to offer plans in their own right, because when I bought my phone, it was through JB Hi-Fi and they had a Telstra deal. It was $39 a month for 20 gig. So it's already $10 cheaper and I get 5 more gig than their cheapest offering on their website. So I assume they're still going to do deals like that with their partners.
Yes.
Otherwise, like, I'm not going to be re-signing up with them. And then you compare that to Optus, who you're with. They currently have, at the moment, for $40 a month, 50 gig. So it's $10 cheaper and you get 50 gig compared to 15 gig with Telstra. And then you can go up to $45 a month, which is a just insane offer they have at the moment. We're not advertising Optus, by the way, but like, I can't help but point this out. $45 a month for 100 gig.
Jeez. And mind you,
and if you're with Telstra, that's $80 a month.
Yeah, and a lot of these options are, you know, BYO style plans. So they
these are all SIM only.
They can offer you the best option. The best I could get, given the fact that I was looking at a new handset on Optus, was that was $85 a month, and that got me 50 gig of data, and the phone was included. No repayments on that, because the phone is pretty much included. Like, they've done a bulk deal with Huawei when they've been releasing these handsets and been able to factor that into the overall plan generally.
Yeah, it's insane. And I think just over time, and we have been seeing this trend, getting more data, more bang for your buck, and hopefully that'll continue. And this is a great move for Telstra, and it's definitely a move in the right direction.
It is.
Although it's not quite there for me when you comparing it to some of the other offerings out there, just personally.
It's not quite there, but, you know, this is good for Telstra because they're making these changes that, you know, people have wanted for a long time. It's not entirely the change that everyone wants, but, you know, it's on the way to being there. And, you know, they just need a little bit of a nudge in the right direction and they might make some more improvements and realise, you know, that's the percentage of the market share that they could have had before, you know, all their previous ridiculous trades.
You know, hopefully they win some people back before it's too late, although you may be safer not having a phone at all, not even being connected to a provider. Because I don't know if you saw this recently, but it's now come out through some analytical research that hackers have stolen call records from over 10 cell providers worldwide.
Now,
worldwide as part of a massive scale espionage attempt.
Now, the definition of call record, you'd be talking the connection information, people touching the mobile phone network, the numbers that they're dialing, how long they've been connected for, that sort of information.
And location too, so the cell network they're connected to.
But so this combine, this hasn't affected a country like Australia?
No, it looks like currently the 10 unnamed cell networks are across Europe, Asia, Africa and the Middle East. Whether or not this is targeted or impacted North America or Australia hasn't been confirmed. Now, look, I'm not going to, who can say, but it's not mentioned in the article that I've, or articles that I've come across. So I think we are safe and America could be safe. But I mean, are we really safe? Like, is our data out there somewhere stored where the potential is always there for it to be taken?
Our information is always stored like this, you know, in infrastructure. I don't know about to the point that, you know, people can hack in and get this information. One does have to have the thought bobble in their mind with all the, you know, the concerns that people have had with Huawei and their potential spying. Could there be some connection here?
Oh, look, who knows? You could get one of those rooms and have the pictures up all on your walls and the red string going from pictures and create a giant spider web in your wall. And, you know, how deep does the rabbit hole go with all of this stuff? But it is a scary new world we live in with all our data and every movement we essentially have with a, you know, this tracking device in our pockets that could potentially be tapped into, and all these social networks you could eat, like, it's out there for the taking. And I mean, like, another piece of information, which conspiracy theorist, you'd get your red thread and then attach it to this other article that I saw about a bit of a throwback here to the heydays of MySpace. Did you have a MySpace account back in the day, Geddes?
I did have a MySpace account in the very late stages of MySpace being cool.
Yeah, I don't remember if I did or not. It was so long ago. But during the social network's heyday, it's now come out that multiple MySpace employees abused an internal company tool to spy on users. You know, in some case it was, you know, ex-partners or friends or family or their arch nemesis and things like this. So it was basically a tool called Overlord, which allowed employees to see users' passwords and their messages to other people, everything they posted. So it was essentially a backdoor into the platform and they could log in and see everything everyone was doing. It makes you think whether or not there'd be something like that in Facebook, and could that be abused? And, you know, these cell phone hacks, it's a scary. I'm going to shut down all of my devices and go live in a forest somewhere, Geddes.
It's
terrifying.
If you want to think of this as, you know, a major fear for putting information out there, you know, in all honesty, all large infrastructures, you know, which look after a customer base, could potentially be breached by the employees accessing the service themselves if, you know, they want to put them themselves at a position where they could be risking their career and, risking being jailed potentially. I'm not all that much surprised about this. I guess security around passwords might have been a little bit more lapse a little while ago as well. You know, usually those sort of details are generally encrypted to the point that, you know, it's only, a user accessing their own password and changing their password. Or, if an administrator can be brought into the piece, they would reset a password. They wouldn't be able to actually see the previous password combination. I'm not surprised. If you sit and think about it, you think, well, maybe you'd be curious to know, what people were looking at and what their aims were in it and whether anything actually got out. I never really heard anything, to account for the fact that people might have been doing this sort of thing, and they're only just talking about it, which is some considerable time and water under the bridge since
2006,
since the heyday of the social networking platform, and even the change of ownership. I mean, Justin Timberlake took over MySpace and tried to have a bit of a crack at it, but it's a bit of a dead horse at the moment.
Did you know, the fall of 2006, MySpace was the second most popular website in the US and ranked higher than Google search?
It was. We were doing stuff on it in 2007. I was going through a diploma course and, our online connection was on a MySpace profile because people, that's where everybody was. Facebook was just getting its sort of infancy then. Probably mid to late 2007 here in Australia. And then it's just gone gangbusters ever since then.
I remember back in the day I was using AltaVista.
That's a search engine many people have forgotten.
Yeah, AltaVista. I wonder if it's still around anyway.
And there were some Aussie ones as well.
Oh, what was an Aussie one? Can you remember?
I'll come back to you at some point.
Yeah, that one. Such a long time ago. It's hard to remember. It's only Google now, like, dominated.
It's a bit forgettable, like Microsoft and its mobile platform.
Yeah. I was reading recently that Bill Gates said it was his greatest mistake ever was failing to put Microsoft in Android's position as the world's biggest non-Apple mobile operating system. So, I mean, he gave a crack at it, but I don't like, hindsight is a beautiful thing. I don't really know what they could have done differently. I think they were always a bit late to the market. Like when they brought in their Windows phones, everyone had kind of already had and Apple, well, most people had Apple phones, and then Android was kind of getting in there. But yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't know what they could have done differently.
Windows was there at one point in time. If you think about some of the HTC handsets pre Android, pre Apple iOS, they weren't the easiest things to use, and they were more based on Windows than anything, but they were the essence of, a smart device to some scale. The fact that you were using a computerized operating system to control a mobile phone handset, and they got a little bit of market share here in Australia, especially for those, remote users on the Telstra network. But when their mobiles division came in and they were working on their operating system, it just wasn't quite up in the same psyche as these other brands, and it was innovating too slow. And when it did get some market share, one of the fundamental dramas with it was the fact that it was too late, and they left people in the lurch as well, because they gave up support for these handsets, people essentially got left with bricks.
Yeah, it wasn't until after I already purchased an Android phone that I became aware of Windows phone or Windows mobile or the whole iOS. And that time I was already loving what Android were doing and I was kind of committed. So I really had – actually, there was one point where I was seriously considering a Windows phone. Actually, no, I'm not purchasing one, but actually, you know, when I started at work in Albury there, we had the option of – for a work phone was to choose – either an Apple or a Windows phone. They gave me the option to choose. And then I thought really long and hard and I looked up specs and I was so close to going the Windows phone just for the novelty of it. But then I kind of went, well, no one else has it. Like, am I going to be able to have the same apps? Am I going to be able to log into the same systems as easily? Because everyone had written up, you know, how-to guides for Apple phones and Android. But then, you know, if I wanted to check my emails, is there a quick and easy way to do that with the Windows phone? And it was just all this like, are the apps there? Are the systems in place? Is the knowledge there? And the answer was no to all of those things. So then I even chose to go to the Apple phone, a tech lover, and I was drawn away from Apple phone. If you have a look in Discord there, Geddes, you can see my first mobile phone ever. You might have had one a little bit earlier than me, but it was the LG Chocolate and it was a sort of a flip phone with physical buttons and I thought it was a really beautiful, stylish looking phone because the top of the phone was a touch screen and it had the physical buttons underneath. And then I jumped straight from that to full touch screen, my first phone being the HTC Desire, which is the Android operating system. So for me, that was my transition and I've never looked back from Android and that was a long time ago.
Well, I started with the two-line displays, the green and black displays with the old...
I actually still have that chocolate in a cupboard, not a chocolate bar, but the phone. just nostalgic state. I have a lot of text messages on there, a lot of fond text messages that I might want to revisit when I'm 75 or something and back on my youth.
I had a Philips Savvy. That was one of my first phones. You know, I went down the Nokia path like many people did. I also got what I've found to be the first smart sort of phone, which was the Nokia N95 handset. And then we jumped into...
That was a very popular one.
It was. It was. And that had like extra camera functionality. You could slide, you know, the head down to be able to get camera controls or slide it up and get the keypad. A little bit like your chocolate in a sense, except it didn't have a touch screen on it. But yeah, it was the first of the big changes. It was also the beginning of the end for Nokia in creating its own platforms that were attractive because, you know, Apple come in and barged its way through and then Android shortly followed afterwards and they all got the market share.
Yeah, I guess they can't always be winners, can they? What's Apple been up to these days, aside from overly expensive devices?
Yeah, apart from the expensive devices, they've had a few dramas, you know, in recent weeks. They've got some recall programs underway for their 15-inch MacBook Pros. There's concerns for faulty batteries.
Is it exploding like the Note 7? Do we have exploding batteries again? Oh, my God, do I have to leave?
Very reminiscent of the Notes. Although the surprising thing is it's only come to light of late that some of these devices have been sold back as far as, you know, early 2017. And primarily between 2015 and 2017, September and February, that these have been sold. They're an older generation of MacBook Pro units. But they do say the battery may overheat and pose a fire safety risk. It's definitely not the...
Is that the nice way of saying it might explode?
Might explode, yeah. It's definitely not the first time this has happened. It's the first time it's got major attention in some time because I know a few Apple users in the past that have had to visit the Apple store because their computer has been bulging. Working fine, but bulging. And that's the, I guess, the early stages of a battery giving up. And when they see these sort of things, they've got no reason to deny their warranty claim. You know, they're beautiful-looking devices. You know, most of the hardware configuration is good. I would put Windows on one of these if they were given to me.
Windows.
Well, they run Windows very well, actually.
Are you still using a Microsoft Surface? What's your laptop or tablet?
Okay, so I've evolved to a Lenovo, and I'm using one of Lenovo's ThinkPad style. What do they call them now? What do they call the iterations?
God knows those fancy
thin notebooks, the ones that you can fold over and use as a touch screen with a stylus.
Like a two-in-one.
Yeah, two-in-one.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. It would not have a special fancy name, but yeah, two-in-one sort of touch screen tablet. Yeah, beautiful device.
So
Apple has not produced anything like that, have they? They don't really have a competing platform.
No, because their idea of that sort of thing, the thing you hold in your hand and use, is not a computer. It's effective as a computer, but it doesn't run the same operating system because you're controlling it with your finger, not a pen.
Battery issues, no bulges where they shouldn't be, no overheating or...
Not with anything that I've had
fire
lately.
Fire hazards, yeah, okay. So basically, Apple are making really expensive, overpriced products that may explode. Not very appealing this year, are they?
No, and another considerable
factor...
But
you can grate your cheese on them.
Yeah, you can grate your cheese on them with the more expensive models. They're just not for the people who are not devout Apple people, they're just not making anything that really incentivizes you to run out and buy their equipment. People who are buying all of these latest updates are basically there for the cult status. And to be honest, after spending many years having an Apple iPhone, the reason I jumped off was because it was just getting so damn expensive and I wasn't getting anything that was, that outstanding. I just gave up. It was more effective for my bank balance to have other nice things rather than one of those Apple phones in front of me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've never really been a big fan of the Apple products.
Don't we know about this?
I think you've... Yeah, I know, every week. But maybe 2020 will be their year. Maybe they'll do something like Telstra didn't realize they're going to lose their customers unless they sort of change their older way of thinking and make things a little bit more affordable for the masses. Maybe like AMD are doing.
Well, yeah, AMD, they've spent some time, I guess, in the back of the spotlight. They really haven't had the attention that they've needed for some
time.
They've
always been the underdog, haven't they?
They've been the underdog in the technology, but not always. Like when I was more of a gamer, in the early 2000s, some of their CPU architecture was... very good for what we were doing and affordably priced, and it made
throwback to the old LAN party days.
Yeah, huh? LAN parties. It made it easy for you to build systems and take along to those LAN parties and have a real good time. Their graphics infrastructure has been impressive over the last 5 to 10 years. There's a lot of people using their graphics cards. Not only for gameplay and image processing, Bitcoin production was using them
mining.
The mining factor of it. It was actually meaning that, their graphics cards were being sold at immense rates just because there was so much demand from people stocking up with this equipment. But, Intel's, I guess, starting to ever so slowly lose... their name stake in the market and the share in the market to the point that, some reports going around in the last couple of years and right up to now even is suggesting that, the next release of an AMD CPU actually might start Intel on the path to reducing their costs, that they're selling their
chips. Thank God.
to retail for, because, you know, if they don't, they're not going to remain competitive enough in this game. And, you know, they're going to lose some market share because you know, AMD is starting to evolve again and find their place, you know, after so much dominance that Intel previously had. Now, I might just add at this point in time, from being a power user, you know, of PC equipment in the past, what I've always found, you know, is that brands like AMD, their CPU technology are fantastic for your everyday use. You know, gamers have found them great as well. I've always led towards Intel for, you know, the way their chips have been able to handle certain tasks. So in the form of, you know, if you do video editing and heavy image work,
yes,
I would have suggested those sort of chips would be more, you know, an Intel device rather than anything. But, you know, I guess with our future releases and that desire to drive a CPU further and further, you know, if AMD have got their footings right, best for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've always, I've always loved AMD, but I've never really fully invested in an AMD system. I might have actually at one point, I honestly can't recall, because I kind of go back and forth quite a lot. But this kind of Intel CPUs, and then you got NVIDIA with the GPUs, but then you've got AMD with CPU and GPU. And the biggest thing is, with if you're going for a new system, this might not affect people who buy the systems already complete, but those a little bit more heavy users or power users, as you say, or people that, you know, the type of people that would be listening to this podcast, we like to build our PCs ourselves. So if you're looking at a brand new system, you need everything to go with that system. So you need your motherboard, the socket. It'll either fit an Intel socket or an AMD CPU. So you need the motherboard that'll match with that. So if I already have a motherboard that, you know, has the socket that'll only fit the Intel CPUs, I need to get an Intel CPU. Now, if I want to now change bandwagon and go, oh, that new AMD CPU looks really great, I'd love to switch over to it, but now I have to buy a new motherboard as
yes.
well to go with my new CPU. So that's the only downside. But if I was to come full circle and do a full new build, which I'm this close to doing, I might seriously consider switching to AMD, because they have a proven track record of actually performing exceptionally well. Their price point is amazing, and just their passion and dedication to you know, pushing forward computing, they actually seem to really care about it. Especially with gaming and graphics performance, they like really care about gamers and want to really push their envelope there and get you the best bang for your buck. Where Intel and NVIDIA, they seem just a little bit more, I don't know, in it for sort of the money and a little bit more corporate. So
they're in it for their market dominance,
price hike, yeah, and the shareholders and all that sort of thing. So they are a little bit more expensive. Don't get me wrong, they're great CPUs as well, but you'll be definitely maybe paying a little bit more than you should. But if you paid less, you could potentially get the same performance from AMD. So that's really cool to hear, and competition's great, because there was a moment in time where I was a little bit scared for AMD. Maybe a few years back, I was like, oh, I don't know, they kind of released some graphics cards and they weren't really up to par with the NVIDIA equivalent. Everyone was like, oh yeah, go NVIDIA for gaming or graphics processing or editing and stuff like that. But I think they've worked at it, they put their head down, they've focused, and yeah, I think they're there. I think my next build might just be a full AMD build, CPU and graphics card.
And that'll be interesting to see. The other interesting thing to see as well will be how much further we can go with the science behind process miniaturization, which is essentially what is happening when they're building new CPU chips. They're managing to squeeze, you know, more power into less space. And, you know, there has been a significant path If you take a look back from some of the early Pentium chips, the early to mid 90s, right up to now, there was one big rush period, in the late 90s to mid 2000s, and then the curve slowly dies off. Science has a way with things.
What was that Moore's law? Is it that every 2 years computing power will double or something? Is the speculation there?
Mm. And then we've got to this
nanotechnology,
point.
Yeah. In the future. Yeah.
And then we've got this point as well where we've got computers that are in their fourth variation that you can hold in your hand. The Raspberry Pi technology has gone in leaps and bounds, and people are doing interesting things that are involving them into, computing science now because it's not expensive to buy and, it's fun to play around with.
Yeah, like a Google Glass, Google Goggles, Bionic Eye next, and, next thing you know, we're in a Black Mirror episode.
Yes.
Well, that's all the tech news I've had for this week, and I am very much forward to catching up with you next week where I'll be telling you all about my Insta 360 1X and how that's gone, and hopefully I'll have some content up on the old YouTube channel and techwrap.net. I'll post up a review there, so keep an eye out for that one.
And while other stuff is going on with technology, we will, of course, keep it up on techwrap.net. We'll keep posting whatever we can find in the world of tech and talk about it every week with our podcast as well. And I do dabble in radio as well. I'm on a few radio stations, although I did actually have a break this week due to the craziness of life. But yeah, you can find the details on techwrap.net. It's always great to catch up and talk technology. We're on the social media as well, aren't we, Will?
Absolutely. You can find us on Facebook, Tech Wrap Australia, also techwrap.net. You can find all the links on Twitter. We are Tech Wrap Podcast. Follow us on all the social media channels and keep an eye out for my Insta 360 1X unboxing like it's Christmas Day. And Mr. Trent Geddes, it's been an absolute pleasure, and I look forward to catching up with you next week where we'll talk more tech.
Absolutely, and I can see you finishing here and going mad on this camera before you know it.
With the latest in technology news and views, this is Tech Wrap, the podcast.